Could Wisconsin's newly minted Foxconn law be open to legal challenges? Perhaps, according to attorneys for the state legislature. The nonpartisan legislative council has released an opinion that some portions of the law might be unconstitutional. The areas of possible concern don't revolve around the size of the huge incentives package for the Taiwanese electronics manufacturer. Rather, they're related to provisions lawmakers inserted into the deal to expedite court rulings on potential litigation against Foxconn. UW-Madison political science professor Howard Schwaber explained his take on the possible problem areas of the law with WUWM's Annalise Hensel.
The Legislative Council was, I should say, careful in the way they phrased their opinions, which is appropriate, because it's a little bit of an unresolved issue. In the federal court system, there's very little question that Congress has very wide discretion to control or affect what kinds of cases lower federal courts hear and by what procedures cases arrive at the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's because the federal Constitution says that Congress has the authority to establish inferior tribunals and doesn't say much more than that. It's a much trickier question, frankly, to ask whether under the Wisconsin state constitution, the Wisconsin government can pass a law altering the path by which a case proceeds through the state courts. Now, there are a couple of different pieces here. One is the expedited appeal directly to the state Supreme Court. And that's probably fine. And you'll notice that I'm hedging in the same way that the Ledge Council hedged, where I use the word probably, because I don't think, as far as I know, the question's never been authoritatively answered with respect to Wisconsin. The more difficult one is the provision that says that any ruling by the lower court will be automatically stayed pending that appeal. That is really much more questionable. And the reason is that any court that has authority to review a case has authority to grant a remedy or, in an extreme case, an emergency measure, such as a temporary restraining order or an injunction. And that is really a core judicial function. It's not based on some delegation of authority from the legislature or some statute. It's historically viewed as inherent in the authority and the role of the courts. And to give you an example, that was broadly construed the authority that federal courts relied on to order the desegregation of southern schools, just to take one example. These are called the equitable powers of courts. The most familiar is contempt of court, but actually there are lots of them. So, for example, if a business is involved in litigation and there's really serious issues about who controls the assets and there's bankruptcy and so on, a court can order what's called a keeper, someone who will come in and control the cash register and control the books for a period of time. And that's one of those authorities that courts sort of just have just because they've always had. And in a private lawsuit, it's part of the remedies for the suit. Here, it's a little more complicated. But there is a long-standing tradition that in addition to the authority to carry out mandates of the legislature, courts have certain authorities of their own that are triggered when the court takes action, usually in a judgment in a case. So, again, think of sending the bailiffs to collect property in a lawsuit, or sending the marshals to force someone to testify, or to compel a party to comply with a court order, that sort of thing. Here, there's at least an argument that the legislature is trying to short-circuit that uniquely judicial power. And there's a pretty good argument that that's none of the legislature's business.
Okay, so this determination is out there by Ledge Council, and a lot of people are going to be, you know, paying attention to it, and critics of the Foxconn deal will say, you know, here's proof of another reason why it's bad. But in terms of what this determination by Ledge Council actually does, could a party who doesn't like Foxconn file some sort of challenge to the Foxconn bill over this issue now, or would this have to be something where once this provision would kick in, that someone would have to say, no, you're stepping on the power of the court to come up with a remedy?
Right. That's a great question. And the answer is, yet again, I'm afraid, it's not clear. So, I mean, the question you're raising is technically a question of standing. At what point would someone be able to go to court and say, hey, this provision is no good? Ripeness is the name of the standing doctrine that's involved. That's not 100% clear. Given that the point of the provision is to limit the effects of judicial challenges, you could make an argument that this provision has an effect even before it kicks in. Well, not before it's enacted, but before it's applied on the grounds that it will discourage lawsuits or something of that sort. And the Legislative Council's opinion, I should add, is advisory. It's interesting. It's informative. It's written by people who think about these questions a lot. But it's not the case that you can, for example, go to court and say, well, the legislative council said this, therefore I win. That's not really an argument.
Let's say that somebody has a successful challenge to it. Would that, in effect, be a challenge to the entire deal that legislators came up with for Foxconn, or would it just affect this one portion?
Right. As always, there's a specialized name for this because lawyers always have specialized names for things. This one's called severability. Is it possible to sever this piece of the bill, rule on its appropriateness, and still leave the rest of the bill intact? And in this case, the answer is that it is clearly severable. That is, the provision having to do with court procedures has nothing to do with the tax benefits, the subsidies, the relief from regulatory authority, and so on that the rest of the bill provides. So, yeah, I think this particular piece could easily be independently challenged. That challenge will ultimately be heard by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and this provision would never have been written if its authors didn't have a pretty high level of confidence in what the Wisconsin Supreme Court will do.
Howard Schwaber is a political science professor at UW-Madison. He talked with Annalise Henzel.